org. Groovy.
WIOX is supported by the Catskill Mountains Scenic Byway, covering 50 miles of mountain scenery, clear waterways, rolling farmland, and historic hamlets, winding through the heart of the Catskill Mountains on New York Route 28 from Olive to Andes. More information at scenickatskills.com. WIOX is supported by Willow Dre Farm in Andes, an open pastoral setting for year-round corporate events, artistic retreats, and weddings, pondside ceremonies, an 1,800-square-foot reception pavilion, and meadows for up to 300 guests set among rolling hills and mountain views. More details about the facilities and nearby accommodations for overnight guests at willowdreyfarm.com, willowdreyfarm.com.
WIOX is supported by Hana Mountain Resort and Country Club, with 29 guest rooms, restaurant and bar, and ski and stay packages, including lodging and lift tickets at Bel Air, Plattekill, and Wyndham. Information at hanacountryresort.com or 845-586-4849.
Happy Valentine's Day, everyone, and welcome to Health Cetera in the Catskills on WIOX Radio. I'm Diana Mason, the host of Health Cetera in the Catskills, where we focus on the impact of local, state, and national issues on the health of individuals, families, and communities in the Central Catskills. On today's program, we're going to talk about why eating venison can be dangerous for your health, and what can be done to make it safe. Michael D. Benedetto will join us for this important discussion. But first, let's turn to Health Cetera News, a regular feature of this program that highlights recent health news stories. First, a reminder that the flu season is on the rise, hospitalizing more people than we've seen in years, and causing at least three deaths in the New York region, particularly among children. The New York State Department of Health advises people to get the flu vaccine if you haven't already. My advice is to wash your hands frequently and carry and use hand sanitizer whenever you shake hands, when you're in a crowd, when you've been on public transportation or otherwise touching things that a lot of people are touching. Also, cough into your elbow, not into your hand. Now, we grew up with you cover your mouth to cough into your hand. But that just spreads more germs when your hand, then covered with germs, touches something or someone. So the recommendation is that you cough into your elbow, and it might get your sleeve a little wet, but it's better than spreading the germs. And don't be around other people if you're sick. Stay at home. Don't go to work or school sick. And I know for some people, if you don't go to work, you don't get paid. And I understand that. But when you go to work, you're exposing everybody else who may be in the same situation, and you may be making your recovery longer. You really should be home in bed. Next, the big news at the end of last week was the budget bill passed by Congress and signed by the president that averted a government shutdown until later in March. The bill provides top-line spending limits for budgets for the next 2 years, but it authorized funding for several important health programs that I've been talking about over recent months because their funding had run out and they are crucial to the health of children and families in our region. For example, the bill restores funding for 2 years to community health centers, and these are a lifeline for primary care services in poor and middle-class communities across New York State as well as across the nation. The bill also extends funding for the important Child Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, for an additional 4 years. Now, a few weeks before, another bill to extend government funding and avert a shutdown of the government included funding for CHIP for 6 years. So the total funding period for this program is now 10 more years. And as I've reported on this program before, the Catskill region has over 6,000 children who are covered by the Child Health Insurance Program. So there was more in this bill, but to help offset the cost of new spending in the bill, Congress would take some money from a fund established by the Affordable Care Act to pay for public health initiatives such as preventing diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. Concerns about that. So that bill extended government funding until March 22nd. But earlier this week, the White House released the president's proposed fiscal year 2019 budget, which increases funding for the military. And when combined with the tax cuts from last year, create a deficit, a federal deficit that's increased by $7 trillion. And to compensate for this, the president's budget proposes cutting a number of the actual programs as well as budgets of other programs. And we don't have time to go over all of this today, but I will be talking about it in future weeks. But I want to point out a few of the agencies or programs that are on the chopping block. First, the Rural Business and Cooperative Service that provides loans, grants, and payments intended to increase opportunities in rural communities. So why am I on a health program talking about that? Because economic development is crucial to the health of communities. If you don't have jobs, if you don't have that economic development, you won't have a healthy community. Similarly, the Economic Development Administration is on the chopping block. It provides federal grants to communities in support of locally developed economic plans. The Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality that researches ways to enhance the cost effectiveness and the quality of healthcare is proposed to be closed. Now, they are talking about moving some of that work and funds over to the National Institutes of Health. But for people who have paid attention to that agency, its closure is of great concern. The Global Climate Change Initiative is on the cutting block. This proposal reflects the president's decision last year to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement. And if you don't understand the connection between climate changes and health, maybe we need to do a program on that in the future because they are huge. It's considered a major threat to public health, the climate change. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting is proposed to be eliminated. That funds public television and radio stations, including Public Broadcasting Service and NPR. And then the Legal Services Corporation, a nonprofit that provides legal assistance for low-income individuals. These services are often crucial to adequate housing. If you don't have adequate housing, you will not have health. In addition, the National Endowment for the Arts, the National Endowment for the Humanities are proposed to be eliminated. Our region gets grants from these two programs. And where the arts certainly have enriched our community, and this is of grave concern in terms of being able to sustain a strong arts sector in our community that draws tourists and other business to the community. And finally, the Neighborhood Reinvestment Corporation, which funds community development projects nationwide. Now, according to the Washington Post, the budget also takes, quote, a hard whack at the poorest Americans, slashing billions of dollars from food stamps, public health insurance, and federal housing vouchers. It also slashes funding for health professions education and training, the funding of training nurses, health cetera, in the Catskills. I'm Diana Mason, the host of the program, and I'm pleased to have with me in the studio Michael DiBenedetto to talk with us about an issue of great importance in our region where deer hunting is popular. Michael is a retired school teacher and has his own business. And Michael, I understand you also have been a hunter.
Yeah, I've been a hunter all my life.
Yeah.
And right now I don't currently hunt, but I'm still involved in it. I just got my certification to teach hunter certification to students.
Yeah, good.
Which is required to get a license.
Good.
Actually, in all of the U.S.
Wow, awesome. So you're also teaching safe hunting practices, I assume.
I'm doing my best.
Good, good, good.
Trying to be still involved in it.
Good. So Michael, I love deer. I love to see them. I love to eat venison. And I have a nephew who brings me some from Pennsylvania. He uses a bow and sometimes muzzle, which I want to ask you about. But, you know, it's really a treat for me. So you were sharing with me recently that there's a problem with some of the venison we eat. What's the problem?
So the problem is the bullets that we're using these days are traveling at such high velocities. They're traveling at some of them, you know, three times the speed of sound.
Wow.
And, you know, over 3,000 feet per second. And when these bullets hit something, they fragment into hundreds of pieces. Hundreds of pieces, you know, 400 or 500 pieces. Tiny little pieces the size of a piece of pepper or something like that. You know, we used to joke about eating game meat, you'd spit the shot out or something. But with these tiny little pieces, you don't even notice those. Mm. And it was in, I think it was around 2008, 2009, there was a doctor in North Dakota that started thinking about this, and he got a bunch of samples from food pantries, brought those samples in, had them x-rayed, and I believe that he found lead in 53 of 95 packages that that he had picked up from food pantries. So after that, the CDC was called in, they did some studies and whatever, but that really precipitated people being concerned about what was in that venison that they're eating.
So what if we eat a little bit of lead?
Well, especially what happened in Flint recently. That's been a huge deal, and I think it's brought...
That was the contaminated water, lead in the water.
Yeah. Well, the pipes were lead, but, you know, they were protected from... That lead was being protected from the water by this biofilm that was in there, but then they switched the water. It was a little more corrosive. Wore that protective film out, and now people were getting lead. And one of the things, I talk to a lot of hunters. I go to gun shows. I talk to a lot of hunters. And one of the things I always hear is that, you know, well, nobody's ever died from lead poisoning from these bullets. Mm. And if you think back on all the news that was coming out of Flint, I don't think people died there either.
Yeah.
But they said that particularly for kids...
Yeah.
They're going to see the effects of this for, you know, for a very long time in those kids' lives.
Yes.
And the CDC has lowered their, it's not even an acceptable limit, what they, I think they call it the level of concern when they should intervene. They lowered that in the past couple of years from 10 micrograms per deciliter to 5. But they said there's no amount for which they don't see some effects. Mm. So there's no safe amount. Mm. So we've taken it out of gasoline, we've taken it out of our paint. You know, we always hear about toys coming over from other countries, you know, with maybe their standards aren't as high. There's lead in that. So we've taken all this lead out of that to try and remove the lead. It makes absolutely no sense why you would inject this into your food. Mm.
And I might point out that for children, it really means cognitive disabilities when you're ingesting lead. And for pregnant women, they are also very much at risk because you're concentrating all of that to a fetus that's very small. So you're endangering the fetal development as well.
Absolutely. And certainly for, you know, children under 6 or 7, pregnant women, this is a huge thing. And well, one of the things that lead does is it mimics calcium. So calcium is so important in our body for nerve transmission. It's going through our blood. It's stored in our bones. So as we consume that lead as adults, it may be stored in our bones. It's no big deal. But particularly if you're building those bones or whatever, or you go through stresses. We had like birds of prey, and I know this through birds of prey. A bird of prey could tolerate certain amounts of lead, but if something happens where they go through some stress of maybe hunger or something like that, now this lead starts leaching out that was stored in their bones. And even though they might not die from lead poisoning, it's going to affect that they can't hunt anymore. So they'll die from starvation eventually. But it was because it was stored in those bones, and now it's being released.
And we should point out that you do a lot of work with birds of prey.
Well, that's what got me. I didn't know. I'd hunted all my life. I didn't know about this. Other hunters knew about it, but the very first eagle, the very first golden eagle that we caught near Andes, we put a transmitter on, and she went down near Hancock, and it's a solar-powered transmitter, and they started, the transmission was getting weaker and weaker, and the people we talked to said, you know, we think she's down. And she's not getting power in that. You should go look for her. And we went down, and as it turned out, there was a bald eagle that DEC had picked up just a few days earlier from this location. We never found our eagle. The bald eagle had 30 times the lethal amount of lead in it, and it ended up dying. It came over here to Lexington to a rehabber that we know. And what had happened was, DEC and USDA had shot a number of feral pigs that had gotten loose over there. They had a canned hunting program near there. And they shot these pigs. The farmer was supposed to bury them. And the farmer thought, like I would have thought, oh, these high-powered bullets, they would just go right through these pigs. They only weighed 35, 40 pounds. And what's the big deal? So he left them out there for coyote bait. And the eagles saw that as a nice bird feeder, and so they were feeding there, and so we're fairly certain that that's what happened to our eagle.
So we've got lead bullets being used. Do we have to use lead bullets?
well, that's one of the. There is a solution, and it's a fairly simple solution. You could switch to non-lead ammunition. It's become more readily available. For the most part, it works better than lead.
In what way?
Well, it was developed to hunt big game in Africa. I think in the 60s or 70s. And the reason that they developed it to hunt big game in Africa was because it would penetrate so much better. It doesn't fragment. It's a monolithic, so it's all copper. And so because it doesn't fragment, you have that mass that stays together, so it penetrated better. So it works. Personally, I think that it works better. I've done a lot of shooting with this, with both of them. I've gone to different events to shoot. It penetrates better. It's more accurate. And again, you might have to try some different manufacturers. Guns are finicky, and they might not like a Barnes bullet. They might like a Remington bullet. So you may have to try some different rounds. But, you know, the military started using what they call their green bullet in Afghanistan in 2010. And one of the comments that I heard about this was that the lead's best day was their, quote, green bullets every day because it's so much more consistent. that monolithic bullet, instead of, you know, most hunters use, it's a copper jacketed lead bullet, core lock or something like that. I would say 90% of hunters use this. And they put this copper jacket around the lead so the lead doesn't foul the barrels on your gun.
Oh.
If it was all lead going at that speed, it would follow, but you would have to keep cleaning your gun time and time again. So when they make this bullet, this copper jacketed bullet, there's little inconsistencies, and it causes that bullet to pitch and yaw or whatever. So it's not nearly as consistent as having a monolithic bullet. Now, you can also buy a better lead bullet. And a premium lead bullet, which you, if you're a target, you know, if you want to be target practicing or whatever, a match bullet will cost as much as the copper. The lead core locks, what most people use, are about half as much. Maybe not, the prices have changed some now, but the prices have gone down tremendously. You know, California started the... There's a ban on using lead ammunition for hunting. They're phasing it in. The complete ban will be...
This is in California.
This is in California. And they did it not for... Well, they did it for the health of condors, not for the health of people. And the complete ban will be in effect in 2019. And a lot of hunters that I talk to here in New York are afraid that that same thing will happen, that they're going to ban using lead ammo here. So there's a huge resistance against, you know, people. If more people switch to copper, there'll be fewer people that will oppose if New York State goes ahead with trying to ban it.
So I'm not understanding why I, as a hunter, then, given what you just said, would not want to switch. Well, what is my resistance about?
Well, if you think that the reason for... Well, first of all, I'm not sure that they believe the science. We've been hunting with lead for, you know, my grandparents hunted with lead, my parents hunted for lead, you know, look at me. So they're not sure that they believe the science. And there has been more information coming out about the effects on lead and what that does to humans. There's more information now than we knew, you know, 20 years ago, but certainly the Romans knew, even the Romans, going back to Roman times, knew what lead did. Yeah. You know, they used those sheets of lead for lining their pipes and stuff. Yeah. So we've known about lead, but I think for a lot of hunters, they think that tiny, tiny amount, what's it going to do? And, you know, they've done lots of studies. But there is so much opposition to it that, you know, from the NRA or the NSSF, there's so
much
opposition.
What's the NSSF?
National Sports Shooting Foundation.
And their opposition is, what are they?
This is an anti-hunting agenda.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oh, yeah. And that's the opposition in California. This is anti-hunting. It's all about taking away our... Right, says sportsman, but it really goes back to, you know, if you're a sportsman, you see what it does in the environment. Even if you don't believe it's going to hurt you personally, there's no doubt what it does to eagles.
Yeah.
There's no doubt what it does to these birds that are feeding on, you know, New York State, over 200,000 deer are harvested every year.
Wow.
Rough. It's a little more, somewhere around 200,000. Of those, about 120,000 are probably shot with lead bullets. So 120,000 gut piles out there, or wounded deer feeding bald eagles, golden eagles, all these sorts of birds of prey, any of these scavengers, that's a huge amount of lead out there for no reason.
Yeah. And if it can do such damage to a bird, why would it not do damage to a small being like a child.
Absolutely.
Or a fetus.
Absolutely. But if we don't see that right here, then we tend not to believe it.
Yeah, yeah. So you had an experience recently that suggested that we really, if people aren't going to change their bullets, we have to warn people. And even people with really good intentions sometimes don't know about this and need to be more aware of it. Speak to what happened.
Well, one of my pet peeves right now is that there in New York State, hunters donate, and it's a wonderful program. The Venison Donation Coalition is a wonderful program. They're helping to feed the hungry. Almost 80,000. Well, I talked to the person last, and I think last year it was less. I think it was about 70,000 pounds of venison. This is ground venison going to the food pantries, which is a wonderful thing. However, there's no warnings on there. And if we look at other studies, and I just before I came here today, I was looking back at other studies that were done in 2009. They shot 30 deer. They took it to 30. This is in Wyoming. 30 deer, 30 different processors. They had 234 packages of venison. 32% of those had lead. This was going to the food pantries. So they took that lead and they did a study on pigs. Obviously, they aren't going to. You can't.
To humans.
Yeah, you can't feed it to humans, even
it's
though
unethical.
We are.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
can't
yeah.
say that.
Yeah.
But they took the packages that had lead in random amounts, and they had eight pigs. Four were a control group. Four were fed the venison with the lead. And after 2 days, the lead levels went up in the four pigs that were being fed lead, the packages with lead that would have been in the food pantries, it went up five times.
Wow.
Five times the amount that they had. So, Michigan, 89 packages from food samples were sampled. 60%
from pantries.
Of those, from food pantries, 60% of those contained lead. Wisconsin, a similar sort of thing. So it's not that New York State would be any different than these other states. They're using the same bullets. So we should expect, you know, Minnesota has been at the forefront of a lot of this. Minnesota, 1987, they were the ones that started the ban on hunting waterfowl with lead ammunition. The federal government followed up in 1991. But currently, Minnesota scans every bit of venison that goes to the food pantries. Every bit.
Wow.
And even though hunters know that this is going to happen, there's still, I think, I just talked to the person, I think it was 6%. Last year, I think it was 15%. It's still tossed because it contains lead. So there's no doubt that some of this venison has lead. And it's not like, well, you know, it's not like getting fish out of the reservoir where there's a uniform amount of contamination through the meat. If you go to the food pantry, you might get a package that has 50 pieces of lead in it, and you might get a package that has none. Or you might get a package that has 200 pieces of lead in it.
Yeah.
And that's what makes this so tricky to try and navigate through it. It does make it difficult. But I just personally, I think that there needs to be warnings on that venison that's going out there. I worked with the health department, New York State Health Department, last year. They assured me that, and this was before hunting season last year, that every package that went out, there would be information that was handed out to the people getting the meat in the food pantries that it may contain lead, with warnings for pregnant women and children. And at a local food pantry, I was just in 2 weeks ago, I went in, I asked about, and they had no idea what I was talking about.
But they had venison there.
And they had venison that they were giving out. So I don't know where it fell through the cracks. I contacted the health department. I haven't heard back from them. But I just heard from that particular food pantry that they were contacted, and I talked to the person that runs the I guess it's the food pantries in all of New York State. I talked to that person on Monday, and I heard from the local person that runs the food pantry, they can't give out the venison now. They pulled it.
And they can't give it out. Why? Liability?
I have no idea why. I don't know. Mm. When I talked to the health department, I said, well, if you doubt that there's lead in this, why don't we randomly sample some of the packages that are out in the food pantries? And the person that I talked to that runs the food banks in New York State just thought that that was an awful idea. They said it would scare people. And I was like, well, you know, what if the people in Flint said, you know what, if we test that water, that's really going to look pretty bad. Yeah. Yeah. People will be afraid to drink the water.
Yeah. So I'm Diana Mason. You're listening to Health Setter in the Catskills, and we're talking to Michael DiBenedetto about the problem of lead bullets in venison for hunting, and the fact that it then can shatter throughout the deer and contaminate the meat with lead, which is something of particular danger to women, pregnant women and children, but to all of us, and that the food pantries don't have a way to process this at this point or to test it. And so, Michael, the person who is head of the food pantry program in the state, why don't they just agree to labeling it?
Well, I when I was working with the health department, and the health department did work with this, the person who's head of the food banks in New York State, they said the cost to do the labels, there's two states that I know of. I haven't called every state, obviously, and most states have a program like this, but I haven't called all of them. Pennsylvania, you mentioned you get your venison from Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania does almost 100,000 pounds donated to the food pantries every year.
Do they test for lead there?
No. I did talk to the person there, and I said, well, have you ever tested for this? And he said, we've been running this program for 25 years. We've never had a problem. Why should we test it? Wow. And but there are some states, Iowa is one, that on every package, they actually produce a bag to go to the meat processors. Mm-hmm. And so any meat that's donated to the food pantries in Iowa is put in a particular bag. And on that bag, there's warning labels. Hmm. Warning labels for women, pregnant children. And in Minnesota, they have information that they hand out to anybody getting the venison. Even though in Minnesota, every bit of it's scanned, they still have warning, because you still have other hunters, too.
Yeah.
You know, if you're feeding your family, could still be an issue.
So one of the arguments, clearly, with the pantries is that, look, there are people out there who, if they don't have it, they're going to go hungry. You're going to have problems with nutrition. You know, children going to bed hungry is not a good image. And so at least they've got something to eat. How do you counter that argument?
Well, that it is a tough one. And I could go back to the thoughts about the lead in the water in Flint. There weren't people dying. However, the blood lead levels in kids, the effects that is going to be on the kids in particular, and there's a way to fix this. First of all, to think that, and this is what this woman told me, she said, well, if we put these warning labels on there, there may be people that are afraid to eat this venison, and we won't be able to get rid of the venison that's donated. And I could understand the reasoning. I do understand that. And she said, she said, if I'm an adult and maybe I'm just taking care of my 80-year-old mom or something like that, and this is the only meat that I can have, the effects of that lead are going to be minimal. And I could agree with that. And she said, obviously, you know, maybe if you have kids or something, you know, it might be different. But to say that we're not going to put warnings on there because we're afraid it's going to alarm people is just, I don't know. It, yeah. There's something wrong with that reasoning. It's like, I guess it's sort of like the people being afraid of the genetically modified foods. Mm. So you need to educate yourself. And if you choose not to have genetically modified food, that's your choice. Mm-hmm. But you need to be educated about it and look at the science. But to say, well, we don't want to alarm people and put a label on because they aren't going to understand that genetically modified may not be a big deal. To me, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not right.
And in fact, one of the labels that I saw was saying things like, if you are pregnant or if this is for a child, that you should not eat this more than once a month. Or, you know, a warning that really tried to provide who's at risk, greatest risk here. You know, so I, as an adult, you know, might eat it once a week or once a month. It is my choice. But at least I know that this has not been tested for lead and it could have lead in it.
Yes. Yes.
And if pantry's only source of protein is venison, then we've got a problem anyway, right?
Right. Well, they do have other sources. And they said, well, you know, they could have the chicken, or sometimes they have turkey or beef or something like that. But that gets us to another thing, too. And this is the way my conversations go. There's no rhyme or reason. If you were to donate beef, or if somebody wanted to donate beef to the food pantry, this would go through USDA inspections. It's just a requirement. But
so if I'm a farmer raising a cow and I'm donating it to a pantry, that meat, it has to be processed at a USDA.
Yes, and it would have that USDA stamp on it.
Okay.
So being as it's game meat, there's a loophole there. This doesn't have to be inspected. There's no stamp on it or whatever. And actually, if you shot this deer and you processed it yourself, you could take it to the food pantry and donate it. And, you know, I'm okay with that so long as people understand know. That. When I first contacted, and it took a year talking with the Department of Health last year. I started in January, and it got to be right before hunting season started, before they finally agreed to handing out the information, anybody picking up venison at the food pantry. But when I first started that in January, the person I talked to said, well, that's not really our responsibility. This is a DEC responsibility, and those people could go on DEC's website and find out that the DEC indeed has warnings about eating venison that's shot with lead. And I said, so somebody in Manhattan that's going to a food pantry, why in the world would they think to go to DEC's website?
That's the Department of Environmental Conservation.
Yes.
Yes.
And look at their warnings about venison that's shot with lead.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
sort of stunning.
Yes.
So it seems to me there's another approach, and that may be when venison is donated to ask the hunter, what were your bullets made out of? What kind of bullets did you use?
And it could be that certainly would be something that you couldn't enforce it. But hunters all the time, whether you're out hunting, even if you're hunting ducks, now since 1991, here in New York State, you can only use non-lead ammunition to hunt waterfowl.
Oh.
But you're hunting out on your own. What are your chances of getting caught? You know what I mean? There's an ethics that's involved there. So the same way, you know, what you're saying may be true. It should be, listen, hunters, if you're going to be donating this, please use non-lead ammunition. And the food pantries, there should be a warning on there. This may contain that. But hunters in good conscience, so they sleep at night, should be saying, well, listen, you know what? Even if I don't believe this, I'm donating this to the food pantries. I'll shoot it with non-lead ammunition. It's as easy as that.
Yeah. And what about the, what is it, something in gun clubs, fishing gun, rod and glum?
Yes.
Yeah. So if you don't want the state to pass a law around this or a regulation around this,
right,
then why not voluntarily have a campaign that those groups could lead to start to make it uncool to use lead bullets?
Yes, and that has happened in other places. You know, there was there was more cooperation before California started the ban. It was more cooperation from hunters. And when the ban went in, all of a sudden the hackles went up and it's like, we're not letting you do this anymore. I have a friend that was going to a lot of these, the rod and gun clubs, and shooting with hunters to show them how well the non-lead ammunition worked. So that the hunter, and giving them bullets to try. So you're shooting these in your own gun. Well, the NRA provides the insurance for a lot of these rod and gun clubs out at the ranges. So when the ban went into effect, they're like, we don't want you out there anymore. So this friend of mine, he actually runs huntingwithnonlead.org. It's a place you can find a lot of information. He said he would go to these places and he'd be all set up and it'd be like, no, we can't let you shoot here anymore. We're not allowing you to do that.
Wow. Wow. That's sort of crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yeah. So it seems, you know, as we wrap up here, that there are several things that we could do voluntarily. One is that people who are listening can spread the word that lead bullets for hunting are not what you should be using if you're going to, and I hope that if you're going to shoot a deer, you're going to use as much of that deer as you can. So the idea of voluntarily switching your bullets, and if you know somebody who hunts, ask them, are you still using lead bullets? And particularly if somebody's sharing that venison with you, right?
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, good point.
So there is that, we can create that ethic that it's really not cool to be using lead bullets anymore. And it's not cool for the health of people and children and pregnant women and newborns, but it's also not cool for the animals and the wildlife that are out there eating the carrion. So that kind of a sort of consciousness raising, us talking about it among our friends and hunters,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Getting the Rod and Gun Club to maybe embrace a campaign of that sort.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you hopeful?
Well, you know, they've tried to do this in Arizona and New Mexico, voluntarily switching. And it seems to work. If you're giving hunters the free ammo, they try it.
Most they like it.
They like it. Bring your old crap ammo in, trade it in for something better, and you start using it. My son was another one.
Wow.
He said, Dad, what I'm using. And he was using premium lead because he wanted to make sure that he was shooting consistently. So he was shooting premium lead, and that does not fragment as much. It's bonded better to that copper jacket, so it doesn't fragment as much. But he started using copper, and it's like, wow. So he was tickled to death. That's all he uses now.
Wow, wow, wow.
My son-in-law, you know, they eat a lot of venison.
Yeah.
And my daughter told him, if we're going to eat that venison, you have to switch.
Yep. Good, 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 good. So that's a message to all listeners. Yes. If you're getting venison for your family, don't use lead. If you are giving venison to somebody else, don't use lead. If somebody's giving you venison, ask them, what kind of bullets did you use? And maybe the pantries can be making their own informational sheets, actually, Michael, why not, at least to alert people? Venison is wonderful. We just need to make sure it's safe, don't we?
Yeah. And that people know so they can make an informed decision.
Yeah.
And if you're not worried about it, well, that's your choice.
And you probably will go anywhere to talk about this.
Oh, I do.
Yes. Well, I appreciate your coming on to Health Center and the Catskills to share that your information with us.
Diana, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I really, it's an important issue, and I am a venison lover, so thank you for raising my consciousness. And I'm now going to start asking the question, do you use lead bullets? So thank you. And thank you to our listeners for joining us today on Health Center in the Catskills. I'm Diana Mason, and I want to invite you to continue the conversations we'd had today by emailing me at healthceteracatskills@gmail.com. That's healthceteracatskills@gmail.com. After each broadcast, my programs are available at the George Washington University School of Nursing Center for Health Policy and Media Engagement website, where more information on the topics discussed is also available, and including I'll be blogging about this topic. And that website is healthmediapolicy.com. That's healthmediapolicy.com.